you, Honor, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm excited to introduce our two panelists, or moderators today, I should say. Today we have the incomparable Aquetta Jones, who is the assistant principal at Highlands Elementary School in Delaware. Aquetta was also the 2018 NAESP Outstanding Assistant Principal of the Year. And her co-host today is the amazing Andrew Lindsay, who's the assistant principal at Owen Intermediate School in Bellevue, in Belleville, Michigan. And Andrew was the 2019 NAESP Outstanding Assistant Principal of the Year for the state of Michigan. So all of the accolades aside, I just have to tell you that here are two assistant principals who walk their talk and are committed to helping other assistant principals. So I'll let Andrew and Aquetta take it away.
All righty, all righty. We call ourselves the dynamic duo. That's what happens when you merge Michigan and Delaware. Great things happen. So today we are going to first introduce Miss Kelly Ann, who was afforded the opportunity to be one of our spokespersons in the Wallace Foundation, AP Rising Observation Post. So we want to introduce Miss Kelly Ann, who is the Director of Equity, Leadership, and Talent Development, a mouthful, which is great, and Long Beach Unified School District. Let me just tell you, we have a powerhouse team on here today. She provides leadership support to multiple departments in Long Beach Unified School District. She makes sure that every child and teacher from pre-K through 12 and administrators all feel supported in their schools. She also believes in the alignment of the assistant principal and the principal and ensuring that greatness comes out and is represented well. So I am so excited to hear from Miss Kelly Ann today, our feature speaker. And we also have the lovely Nicole Ickes from right here in Wilmington, Delaware. Delaware is so small, so this doesn't happen very frequently, so let's hold on to it. Well, we have Miss Ickes, who is currently a reading specialist at Highlands Elementary School, who is aspiring to be a leader and soon will be. She has served as a district literacy coach, a school director for the Sunshine Center in Harlem before we stole her here in Delaware. She is a master teacher, and she just loves working with the babies and pulling them in and getting them to read and to do things that I just can't do. Here you go, Andrew.
All right, so I want to introduce Jean Smith. Jean Smith works with me here in Belleville, Michigan, in Van Buren Public Schools. She is an instructional coach. And she is really my right hand when it comes to all things reading and writing and instructional practices. She's been in the field for over 20 years. You wouldn't be able to tell that. Served in a variety of capabilities, including first, fourth, sixth grade, as well as reading intervention for all of our elementaries. She has presented for a number of different organizations, ranging from the Michigan Association of Computer Users and Learning, so she's got that tech side, to the Michigan Reading Association to give you that reading side, as well as the Michigan Elementary and Middle School Principals Association, which is Michigan's NAESP satellite organization for principals. So she's got that leadership as well. She's got an ed specialist degree in curriculum and instruction in the area of literacy coaching, and is, like I said, she is our right hand here at Owen Intermediate when it comes to working with teachers to build their practice. So we are excited to have her here. And we are excited as well, Aquetta, to talk today about the assistant principal's role in literacy instruction. All of this is based off the post that was in the November-December issue of the Principal Magazine, the Observation Post. And it really details how assistant principals work with teachers to build literacy practices. One of the things, before I turn it over to you, Aquetta, that I pulled out of this article was a quote from Jill Baker, the superintendent there in Long Beach, who says they look for people who are highly effective as a teacher. And then she went through and said seven things that are related to that. Really strong relationships with students, embraces of equity mindset, thinks of their own learning as part of that mindset. Someone has a strong work ethic and loves teaching students, but also loves the idea of nurturing learning and work of adults. And those are the kinds of educators that we love to work with. But that was a huge takeaway for me out of that article. Aquetta?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not going to get too deeply into the article, but I will say, Andrew, I want to give thanks to Wallace Foundation, because school leadership, according to them, is the second only, let's hear that, AP, we are second only to teaching among school-related factors. And we are the piece that helps to impact student learning. That comes right from the website. Go in there and get some. That's some good stuff. They have some good stuff. Let's just move on. Thank you,
Mom. All right. Okay, so we're going to break this down into three different questions that we'd like to center our discussion around. We invite everyone, first of all, to introduce themselves in the chat if they have not already done so. Say who you are and where you are from. It's kind of exciting to see people from Texas, Panama, North Carolina, Washington, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, all over the place. Peru, oh my goodness. So we are worldwide today, folks. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through three questions. If you have responses to these questions, we're interested in what you have to say. Please feel free to ask questions in the chat box. And so we'll just get them going. Question number one, which is, what is the role assistant principals play in literacy instruction? Kelly, we're going to kind of start off with you. What are your thoughts when it comes to this question here?
Sure. Well, I'd first like to just say to Aquetta and Andrew, thank you so very much for inviting me to be a part of this discussion. I know that we all know the principals are key. They're central to literacy instruction. And I'll say in Long Beach, what we like to refer to them as the apprentice lead learner. So if you have not, I'm not sure if you can see my book up here, but this book, The Principal by Michael Fullan, is key to our work. And so what we mean by that is we know principals should be lead learners. It doesn't mean they're leading all of the professional development or the instruction happening, but they are lead learners. And so we do look at our assistant principals as an apprentice to that, meaning that teaching and learning is foundational to the work that they are doing. And so besides all else, administrators in Long Beach have to be strong teachers in order to be leaders in our system. And so one of the examples that I want to share is we have a pipeline program in Long Beach. There are 14 pipeline programs. And so we begin nurturing teacher leaders to then come through to be assistant principals, principals, directors, superintendents. And part of that is we believe in having assistant principals take on an instructional project. See it through from start to finish, because the only way you can learn to really lead in literacy instruction is to take on that role. And so right now, for example, we have our current assistant principals. They're analyzing both quantitative and qualitative data. They're looking at that and digging into and finding out what are the equity gaps. You know, I have at my site. They're forming teams, and they're leading that team in finding some adaptive solutions to the work. Meaning, you know, let's take a look at this, let's build capacity in others, and let's lead them through. What is our problem? How are we going to go about solving that? How do we try something out, monitor that, and then come back to, you know, see the impact? Because the bottom line, the impact on student achievement is key. It's not about what the adults need. It's about what the students need.
I love that. I love that.
When do the principals and the assistant principals, what's their best time to come together to do that work of the data analysis and be the lead learners? How how do they meet and how do they carry out that practice?
Well, there's an expectation in Long Beach. Our administrators, our principals and APs meet together on a regular basis. But we also have what's called instructional leadership teams at every site. And so this is where the administrative team comes together with lead teachers. They look at that data. There are usually monthly meetings scheduled. They look at the data. They identify best practices. It's also a way for assistant principals and principals to build capacity in their teacher leaders at their site.
Excellent. So Nicole, you know, what's it like from an instructional coach or a reading specialist point of view, observing the role that Aquetta has in supporting the literacy instruction there at, I had a mind blank on the school, Red something.
Hi, Red Clay in Highlands.
Red Clay.
Yes.
Aquetta, you get to get me back and ask Jean what's it look like for here. So talk to me, Nicole, about that, the role of assistant principal with literacy instruction there in Red Clay.
For sure. So it's a pleasure, actually, and a joy to work with Aquetta and having her as my AP, because she is what I have learned and seen that is embodied in an AP, right? They are, like Kellyanne said, they're central to the instruction. They are leaders and they're supporters. So what I mean by that, they're leaders in the fact that they know what the instruction should look like. They know the curriculum. They know the materials, the ins and outs. They've sat in the professional development with their teachers. So they know the professional development that the teachers are receiving. So therefore, they can, in turn, support the teachers with their instruction as they're giving it, and allow to make sure that we're giving that with fidelity to the students that are in front of us. So are we, you know, do we have our tier one tight so that way when we get into our tier two and tier three, we know that those are the kids that really need it. So they're leaders. She's a supporter. She's there co-planning, co-teaching with teachers. If she needs to model or get into any of that, she's there with them. So they know that she is supporting them through the process and supporting them through finding resources, finding extra people, myself, using our literacy coach as a partner with me to come in to help them in their classrooms, whether it be find materials to plan or to support in that way as well. You really see the AP role getting down and dirty when it comes into the literacy instruction. If a teacher is struggling, or we want to make sure that the literacy instruction at Highlands is tight, it's all hands on deck, and that means the AP as well. And so they are in there, in the classrooms, in PLCs, learning with the teachers, in professional development, learning with the teachers, using that to circle back, to go into the instruction that's happening with our students.
Well, you know, Andrew, I paid her like $1 million to say that, to make me look really well. So I'm going to hope that Jean can do the same thing for you over there at Owen. Jean, can you tell us a little bit about Andrew's role?
Sure. Like Kelly and Nicole both just said, the AP carries all of these roles. And Andy is not the exception to that rule. He is sitting in on the PDs with us, and what I like about Andrew is that if he doesn't know something, which everybody can't know everything, and so especially when it comes to the literacy, he knows the key people to go and talk to. He's met with our interventionists and tried to learn the skills and the strategies that the lower level learners need in order to be successful. And then he shares that with the classroom teachers, because they still have those students in their classrooms as well. He knows who to go to and who to ask those questions of. He's attended PD through the county in order to enhance his skills when it comes to literacy issues. So I really admire that about what Andrew does for our school and for our district. I think it's really important that the assistant principal knows the curriculum, like Nicole said, the scope and sequence. He may not know everything within the specifics of what the classroom teacher is doing, but he knows where they're going or what the different aspects of the curriculum are in order to support those teachers. So that's really helpful.
So one of the comments that a person in our chat, D'Amico, said is that his role right now is in the classroom fostering math students to write responses to critical thinking questions. So that kind of goes in the direction of interdisciplinary. I'm kind of opening up to anybody, you know, how does an AP promote literacy instruction across the curriculum?
So I can start that. One of the things that we've been looking at in our building is looking at literacy across the curriculum and not just within the ELA classroom, and getting the math teachers involved and getting the social studies and the science teachers involved, and what does literacy look like in those strategies. We tried some strategies a couple of years back, and so the talking to the text and things like that that the teachers were trained in through the reading apprenticeship program, we still circle back to those. And so some of the things that we make sure that we're doing with our teachers, and Andrew is, again, goes in and helps teachers by reminding them of these things that we get a lot of PD. There's a lot of things on our plate. And so sometimes the teachers will forget, oh, yeah, 2 years ago I remember doing that, and I did it really well for a while, and then I forgot about it. And so the assistant principal going in and saying, hey, remember when we did this, and bringing those teachers across the curriculum back into that literacy aspect.
Yeah, and I would love to just piggyback off of what Jean said too, and reminding teachers that what is in your tool belt can be used in other content areas. So you have all these literacy tools that you use during your ELA and your writing blocks, but then we forget about them when we get into our math problems or our science, you know, explorations, and we need to apply all of our literacy, you know, skills and strategies to those as well. And so literacy is everything that we do, and it marries very well interdisciplinary throughout the content. And so just reminding teachers that they can do that and using all the tools in their tool belt, and just because they learn a new tool doesn't mean they have to discard the rest of the tools that are in their box. They're just adding to their collection so that they have different tools to use depending on the situation that arises within their classroom.
And if I can just add on to what you're saying, Nicole, I appreciate that. I think that the assistant principal also has a vantage point to leverage cross-departmental collaboration at this time too. And that's where it's kind of, you know, as an assistant principal, you're able to sit in and sit down alongside teachers as they're planning, for example, in literacy. And then you can sit down with your math department, and then you can kind of bring the two together at places that can marry nicely.
So one of the follow-up questions was, one of our panelists or one of our audience members said that they're seeing a lot of depth of knowledge at like level two and wanting to push that to a higher level. What role can assistant principals play to up the rigor that they see in the classroom? Any thoughts on that?
I can jump in on that. I think that really comes in the form of feedback. The day-to-day supervision and feedback is where assistant principals can kind of leverage individuals to, you know, create deeper and more meaningful tasks. I think that, you know, that challenge students accordingly. But a lot of that, I'll say, and I think that almost kind of leads into our second question to Andrew, because I think about the classroom walkthroughs with that. Mm-hmm. And how do you as an assistant principal kind of go into classrooms, calibrate feedback with your principal to ensure that there's alignment, and, you know, use questions that prompt the teacher to reflect and push forward on next steps. And I'll say, and also ensure that every piece of feedback is tightly aligned to the end goal you want to get them to. Because sometimes it's very easy to, we're so busy, we go into classrooms, we give a piece of feedback, and then we look back, you know, three notes later and say, oh, wait a second, I was asking them something different. And so really being diligent in aligning our feedback to get to the end goal, I think that's how we can push teachers forward to think about, you know, building their skill set and creating deeper tasks.
So Matthew shared creating a collaborative culture to examine data, one another's teaching, and student learning is an important role of the assistant principal. And a lot of our guests have spoken to the data analysis piece. So that takes us right into our second question, which is, what do assistant principals need to know about using data and teacher observations? Kelly Ann started touching on it just a little bit, so we're going to let you elaborate a little bit more, because we have a lot of questions about data, qualitative, quantitative, decision-making, whether it's valid, you know, what the norms are across the school. Should it be bi-weekly data? Should it be weekly? So I think our viewers are really interested in this question.
Well, you know, first I'm going to say, I think in this time, essentially our focus right now is on attendance data, because if they're not there, they
yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So in the virtual setting, this pandemic that we're up against, it's tough. It's tough to just get them there and then to, you know, work on engagement, a whole other piece. Let me just share, I really focused on the teacher observation piece in tandem. So I'm going to share a little bit about that. First, I think that there's three things: coaching, calibration, and communication. So I'm going to say that again: coaching, calibration, and communication. And in Long Beach, we believe that in terms of teacher observation, we are both an evaluator and a coach. So we know that that's not necessarily always the norm, what's believed, but we do believe that you can be an evaluator and coach. So don't get me wrong, we have a formalized process for evaluation that we go through. However, we believe in coaching, in building the relationship, and in leveraging the strengths of a teacher in order to push forward. So the lesson analyses are viewed as we go in for formal observation. Lesson analyses are, yes, they are the milestone markers, we'll say, for the progress the teacher is making, but really the evaluation, that's just coaching. That should feel like any other day-to-day piece feedback that they're given. So we do go through that coaching cycle. We look for patterns and trends with teachers. We do believe in Long Beach, we say coaching is a way of being. And so with teacher observations as an assistant principal, you don't just become a coach all of a sudden, right? We believe in fostering that. And that's why we have 14 pipeline programs. We foster that from the teacher level all the way through. So they build their coaching skill set and those tools to be able to move someone forward, because we know an evaluative or a punitive note doesn't move anyone forward, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, can you talk a little bit about what that, like, walkthroughs look like in that context?
Yeah, and so I think that's where calibration comes up. It's calibration through walkthroughs. So one of the things that we do is our assistant principals go very often with their principals, almost on a weekly basis now. They visit classrooms virtually. And they provide feedback. And once a month, they walk through the assistant principal, principal, and principal supervisor. They walk through classrooms and they calibrate, because, you know, you and I can both walk into a classroom. We may see some different things. And so if we are, an administrative team, we have to ensure that we, when we're looking for certain aspects, for example, learning targets, how do we calibrate on what that should look like and sound like in the classroom? And then how do we calibrate on our feedback and what's given to the teacher? And so that's a key piece there for us. And I'll also say the last thing I mentioned was communication. And so really we're teaching, we're having assistant principals and principals teach through a communication model, meaning we're looking for like listing low inference evidence. It's not about what I like or what you like. It's about, here is the low inference, you know, evidence that we see, and here's the impact that evidence has on instruction moving forward. So I know I've spoken a lot. I'm going to let my colleagues Nicole and Jean share a little bit.
So Jean, what are your thoughts about how data and teacher observations are used?
The term that Kelly was using, the calibration, was not necessarily with that term, but that was my biggest thing, is making sure that when the assistant principal, the principal are going into the classroom, that calibration, knowing what you're looking for, knowing what it looks like and sounds like and feels like in the classroom before you go in. Having that all laid out ahead of time and being clearly communicated to the teachers. One of the questions about the DOK and requiring questions, one of the attendees had posted, you know, could you require questions to be in the teacher's lesson plans? And I think that as part of our school improvement plan, when we started setting goals that were based on data and then setting progress monitoring into place and knowing exactly what we were looking for in classrooms, communicating that with teachers, posting that around the school. It's posted in our teacher workroom. It's posted in the office conference room, exactly what we're expecting for teachers to be doing in the classroom. And then you start to see that more and more because as the principal, the assistant principal goes through those classrooms, they can have those conversations with teachers on those specifics. And so really being clear about what's being looked at, what data was collected, what are we saying about the data, what is it that we plan to do in order to improve that data, and then setting those, like Aquetta had said, setting those progress monitoring into place. How far out are we looking? Are we going to look a week down the line? Are we going to look 2 weeks down the line? Are we coming back in a month to look at that data again and see what did our observations show us? One of the things a few years ago when we had to go back through accreditation and they sent in state observers who had never been in our building before, and they go through and they take a 5-minute snapshot of a classroom. And so for teachers, that's so nerve-wracking because they have no idea. We get this, you know, laundry list of things that are going to be looked for, and they come in for 5 minutes, and they say, oh, we didn't see this, we didn't see this, we didn't see this. Well, you were in there for 5 minutes. And so I really think, you know, being able to tell teachers when your evaluator is coming in or when your coach is coming into your classroom, these are the things they're specifically looking for. These are the things that should be happening on a regular basis. And so not having surprises. And I think Kelly mentioned the feedback portion. Giving that feedback and giving the feedback right away is so important because I talk with teachers all the time that aren't in my building. And they say, you know, my principal came in, she did an observation, she was there for over an hour, and I never heard from her again. I don't know if she liked what she saw. I don't know if she didn't like what she saw. And so giving that feedback right away, I know Andrew puts a postcard in your mailbox, right after the evaluation or within at least a day and says, you know, thank you for letting me come in. This is what I saw. This is, you know, I'd like to talk to you about, but just giving that feedback right away, I think is so important.
So one of the things I'm going to just kind of brag on Jean for a moment, you know, she's been our right hand with the school improvement plan and making that school improvement plan accessible to the staff. And so it's a living and breathing document, not just something that we do. She's made it into a Padlet for any of you that are familiar with Padlet. And so, you know, everything that we do is being added to that Padlet throughout the year so that it becomes a living, breathing document of where are we at any given moment according to our school improvement plan. One of the things that Nydia said in the chat is that classroom observations can also be centered on students. Asking students questions and talking about the learning will tell you a lot about the teaching and what's going on. I always ask the students two questions. You know, what are you doing? They should know what they're doing. And why are you doing it? Because, you know, what is the task? And then why are you doing the task? Does it apply to the lesson objective? So yeah, I'm in a complete agreement, and I actually have three of my cheat sheets talking about calibration, so that, I'm consistent from, observation to observation, and I get little mental reminders from looking at these while I'm in an observation of, okay, yeah, this is what I see, and this is the depth of knowledge that it's at, because a lot of times, if we play it just by feel, we may not be very specific. And so this allows me to get a gauge for myself of what depth of knowledge or what other look for I'm happen to be using, and then give specific feedback on, hey, this is where I saw this particular activity was at. here's why. And teachers seem to respond pretty well to that type of feedback. So, Nicole, data on teacher observations.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about the teacher observations, and so I would like to touch on that data piece. So data and the data cycle is so critical to the teaching process and with the teacher observations. And so it is so important for administrators and leaders to know how the data is gathered and why do we gather it that way, and why, and then how do we use it and why do we use it that way? And so what data was collected? How was it collected? How is it used? And then why are we doing those things? That purpose is really important because when they get into those observations in the learning and they're asking the students, what are you learning? And they're looking at the activities that are a part of that lesson and the learning that's happening in that lesson, then we can look at, does that align to what the data said? And if it doesn't, then we need to cycle back to the data. What was that purpose behind the data, and how are we using that data to inform our teaching? And then just using that process over and over again. And so looking at whether it be the exit ticket or the learning stations, the activity and learning that's happening, the conversations that's happening, the collaboration that's happening within the classrooms, and that's data too. So using that, analyzing that, reflecting on it, and letting that inform our next lesson, our next unit, and as we go forward. And that's just an ongoing process, and it's really important for our leaders to be a part of that. And so that way when they walk into the room, yes, you have your walkthrough tool, you have your observation tool, you have all of this, but you have to know the other workings of it, because if not, you don't know that activity could look like it's meaningful, but does it actually align to the data that's there of where those kids in that room at that time need it? Or is it from 3 years ago for the kids that were back there, right? We can use lessons again, but we have to align it to our kids. And so that the only way to do that is to know our kids and to use the data that's there with them to be able to do that. And so that data piece is really critical as well for the APs and leaders to know as they're going into the rooms, so they have an idea of what that looks like. And as we talked before, you know, those leaders sitting in the PLCs, having the conversations across departments and having that collaboration so they know what's happening, and they know where we're supposed to be. So when they go into the observations, we can see, are we on track as a building or a grade level? And how do we move from here and move forward so that we can impact our students?
And I think that's why the cycle inquiry is very important. Nicole will tell you, I will say very quickly, where does the data show me the data.
Yep.
If the data supports it, we'll move forward. If not, then it doesn't exist. I'm not here for adult feelings. I'm here for kids. So when we do what's best for kids, we meet everybody's needs because that's our purpose. But we did have a question a little bit back by D'Amico. He asked, can teachers be required to incorporate one critical thinking / open-ended question into their lesson plans and pose that question to students? Now, I will say, here in Delaware, our evaluation system is a little different. I did see Michael's response. In Delaware, we use the Danielson framework. However, we tweak it in red clay to meet some of our needs. So discussion and questioning is a major component, criterion within that component for us. So our teachers know that they have to touch all of those layers in order to fall within that effective range. So when we have a novice teacher, we're speaking to them and they're having their pre-observation conference, we're saying we need to see that you're touching all of these levels. We need to make sure that we have student discussion. We don't just want all direct instruction. So yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say you have to have this. I would say, what does your questioning look like? We have a document in red clay that our reading specialist, we call it the Bible, which literally will offer all of our teachers sentence steps. And it tells them, according to the learning progression and to the Common Core Standard, where this question lies and how to touch and meet the needs of every student and making sure that you are touching the specific skill set that needs to be touched. So we don't like the lesson plans, like teachers say teachers, I know everybody loves it, and if you don't like me, you can send me an email later. However, Ms. Jones, Barry, teachers say teachers. Why? Because teachers say teachers may look cute, but it may not meet the needs of the student or hit the skill set that needs to be met. If you can prove to me that it is driven by data, I got you. But our teachers are talented enough that they really don't have to pay $1.50 to get something that they're already equipped to get. But anyway, not going to get off my soapbox because data is my thing.
Well, and I would like to jump in with that too, because not only is it within our observation framework for our lessons, but it's also embedded within our updated and revised literacy walkthrough tool that we came up with based off of our new curriculum. And one of those pieces is the close reading and our text-dependent questions, and they're in there. So based off of where our kids are and what our learning is for the day based off of our concept map, like, are you reiterating our concept map and our learning for the day? And are you doing that and facilitating those discussions with those text-dependent questions where they're really getting into the text and really understanding what's happening and going on, and the major levels of that with the close reading, right? So bumping it up as you go through with your close reading. And so, yes, it's embedded, and it should be happening. And discussions are very critical to what's going on within the learning for that. But I would also say the discussions within your PLCs and within your grade level teams and the data and what's driving that. What are we looking at as a team for the data? If we're doing a performance-based assessment, what does a 1, 2, 3, or 4 look like for the kindergarten team? What does that look like? And having everybody be collaborating succinct on that, and like, this is a 3. And so we're all on the same page, just like leaders are all on the same page when they're going within the classroom. And so we want to make sure that the APs are helping facilitate that data inquiry discussion as we're walking through that process.
So Juanita in our panel, sorry, Kelly, Juanita in our panel asked about our thoughts about asking the students what and why and how. And are you learning in the virtual? Things are easier in person. It's a whole different ball game virtually. So what are our thoughts about using those questions with the students?
So I will say, I'll let our panel kick in, but I know we're running literally 2 schools, 1 completely virtually and 1 completely in person. So when I pop in, I actually did an observation yesterday in class. And what I did was I let the teacher know before, you know, I'm going to be typing in chat to some of your scholars just to find out, hey, what are you learning? Oh, that's interesting. Tell Ms. Jones more. And I found that rather than me interrupting, because the teacher is the speaker at that time, by being able to chat with my scholars, I was able to get the same information that I would have gotten in person. But I'll let our panel. Would you like to speak to that, Kellyanne?
Sure, I can. I will also say I agree with Juanita's comment around asking the what, why, and how. Because essentially coming alongside a student and saying, well, what are you learning and why? How is this going to help you? I completely agree. I think that's one of the best ways to gauge is this lesson effective? I also wanted to touch on, I know I appreciate Nicole kind of, let's bring us back to the data piece. And in our teacher observations, we do a planning conference with a teacher, we do the lesson observation, and then we do the post-conference. And one of the things as a former assistant principal and principal in our system, I always had teachers bring every piece of student work with them. Because it's not about me pulling the data on their class, it's about them bringing every piece of student work, and as we engage in the post-observation conference, that's the data. Let's sort it by kid. You know, okay, there's 120 kids here. We're going to sort it. We're going to take some time to dive into seeing what students understood this, what are some needs that you see, because that in turn then drives the interventions that have to happen. The interventions that the teacher can go back and follow up on with the kids, it also drives, I'll say, the grade level or the departmental interventions that have to happen. But that data should come from that teacher bringing that lesson. Now, let me also say, at the same time, do we need to, as an administrator, take a look at the department or grade level data for a unit? Yes, we do. Which I think then kind of, you know, leads itself. We look into trends and patterns that way and identify next steps for professional development, for teams as a whole. In moving an individual teacher along, I believe that we have to meet them where they're at. We have to look at the work that their current students are producing and help them to navigate and set goals and push forward.
Thank you so much, Kellyanne. Jean, do you want to touch on it or?
So I started writing things down because I was afraid I was going to forget. I just had two things I wanted to jump in with. There's an organization called The Right Question. That I've subscribed to their email, list. And so it's an organization that helps teachers with that questioning process. And it not only helps the teachers up their questioning game, it also helps the teachers to teach their students how to ask good questions. Because if the students can ask good questions, it means that they are thinking about what they're learning. And they're thinking, and so somebody in the audience had said something about the, you know, being the student-centered. And that's what brought that to my forefront, was if the students are able to ask questions, you know that they're thinking about the content. And so teaching the students, and so not just teaching the teachers how to ask good questions, but teaching the students how to ask those questions and how to formulate good questions, not just, oh, I think he did this, but say, you know, really digging deeper into whatever it is they're learning. And then the other thing is with the data, our MTSS process, I know somebody had said in the chat about going through the data and formulating the interventions and progress monitoring. And so this year, last year, we kind of started it, and this year we've gotten into it a little bit more. Our multi-tiered system of support process has really taken on a whole new life this year for us. We've started the WIN program, What I Need. And I know a lot of districts in our area are doing that. I don't know what it's like across the rest of the country. But for us, we've, as Kelly was just saying, with looking at the data and really making sure that the data that comes from the teachers and in the classrooms and seeing what they're seeing and through the PLTs, like Nicole had mentioned. And so our teachers, once they've looked at their data and they've come to an understanding of what's needed for their students, then they come to a larger meeting that involves our special ed department and our coaches and our speech pathologists and our social workers, and everybody comes to this meeting at least, I think it's once a month or maybe twice a quarter, something like that. And they sit down around a table with each of the teachers and discuss every student in their class.
Socially distanced table.
That's what that's called.
It is a very socially distanced table that's been housed in my classroom this year. So I have an empty classroom. And it's just a giant circle of desks at this point for everybody to come in and stay 6 feet apart. But we're looking at every student in the class. And so the teacher has a chance to say, this student really needs support in this area and who on this team can take them in. And so that's how we determine who sees our interventionists, how long they see them for. We determine what the progress is going to look like. We determine who's going to see the social worker or see the counselor, or who just needs to have a check-in in the morning to get them on track for the day, or have somebody check their homework before they go home at the end of the day. And we're doing it virtually as well. So having those kids are then being pulled out into small breakout rooms with an interventionist virtually. So having all of those things in place, using the data and making sure that it is student-centered is so important and has really changed the way that we look at instruction and data within our building.
So just as a question about data, and we're going to keep this one short so we can move on to the next question, but Gregory asked a question about data in the virtual world and the inconsistencies that we are finding between data that we've had previously and the data that is now. Can any of our panelists speak to how do we manage in this data flux that we're in right now?
I will step in there for a little bit. I just had a conversation with one of our fourth grade teachers about this today, because she's one of our remote teachers, and we had paused all assessments at the beginning of the year, and now that we're within phase two, we're starting to roll some of those assessments out. And so one of the assessments that we're rolling out is Words Their Way. Very difficult to give virtually. One, because they're writing their answers, and or typing their answers. And it is very, small group, individualized, administration, but also very difficult to do virtually because our kids are so savvy, right? So our kids are like, they're like, you ask them to spell the first word, which is bed, and maybe they can't do it. And so if they're muted, you can see them going, Google, how do you spell bed? And then they're writing it down, right? And so we coming up with little tricks and traits. So keeping them unmuted while they're doing it, making sure that you can hear their background, even if it's loud. And so if you know that they're a kid that's a loud background, you're doing it one-on-one in a breakout or during your asynchronous time or during your office hours. But thinking of different ways to do it, having them chat in privately, having them do it on a Jamboard where they're on their own Jamboard, and just bringing technology into it and trying to make it just as easy as possible, right? And then seeing some of those red flags, right? A kid that goes from a BR reading level to a 760, we're pretty sure that's not valid, right? And so, so using the information with our kids as we're seeing them there and saying, well, I know I got to toss that out. And so what am I seeing when they're there, and trying to get them to read to you individually during your small group time, whether you're pulling them individually during those times within a breakout room, and just getting savvy, because we got to step above them, right? Because they are, you know, within technology, and we are the novice for sure when it comes to that. And so trying to just help them out with it, but really helping come up with different problem solving solutions for it. And we know it's also not going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. There's no perfect way to do this virtually, because if there was, we would all be doing it. And so just doing the best that we possibly can, but also just documenting what we're seeing, right? So if we see that it looks like it's not valid or it's not reliable, give another option, give another version. And if that one's not, then, you know, going with what we have when we see them, where they're at on that level, if that makes sense.
Kelly, do you have any brief thoughts on that?
Sure, I'll just share real quickly. I know we've probably all been in virtual classrooms where we've seen the parent's arm come in through the camera, or we have someone sitting there, you know, you hear the answer from the parent. We're definitely in this world now where you're right. I completely agree. There's not necessary, we don't know what the kid really knows sometimes. And I think this is where formative assessment is just gonna come in really strong. So we have to make sure that every lesson has multiple formative assessment pieces so that we're constantly gathering that in order to make a more informed decision about the child's, you know, knowledge base on a skill set or a subject. Because we've seen where a child gets a 10 on some, you know, gets a really high score and is proficient at in one aspect of the writing. Then you turn around the next day, oh, the parent wasn't there. And hey, now we see their actual level. So I think that kind of piece, we do have to just, you know, kind of monitor at this point. We do, though, have some unit assessments we're doing. But once again, that's, you don't always know if somebody is sitting there. And so at this point, we are learning as we go. And we're trying to really make an informed decision of looking at past patterns on this child, looking at what they now know, and how do we make a more informed decision there.
Thank you so much. And remembering that we have never been through a pandemic before. There we are. We're going to get to that next question. I'm loving this discussion, Andrew. I don't know about you.
This number two, data. Oh, it makes my red blood just get fired up.
Yes. So we're going to get into this last question just in case we have some other questions. So we're going to kick this to Nicole first. What are some practical strategies for modeling best practices in literacy instruction?
Forgot to unmute. Okay. So The biggest thing is being in it with your teachers. I know Kelly talked about this, and you know, you're their evaluator, but you're also in that sidestep role of coaching them and leading them and supporting them through the growth process. Growth takes time. And so we have to also be patient with our teachers to give them that time to learn. And so and I've talked about this before, but that ongoing PD process of being in there with the teachers, learning the PD with your teachers, having the conversations about data with your teachers and that planning process with the teachers. So that way when you're in there with them, do we need to model for them? And before we model, we need to co-plan together, because it's not just a I plan, you watch, and then learn system. They need to sit and see how you planned it, learn through that planning process with you, that collaborative planning process. And then determining for the model, is it a straight model? Is it a co-teach? Who's doing the modeling? Is it a mentor teacher? Is it a literacy coach, an instructional coach? If you're at Highlands, is it RAP? Dr. Jones, like, who's coming in to model for the teacher, and what does that look like? And the conversation that happens after is so critical, and having the conversation of, okay, well, what did you notice that I did? And what are some things that you could take back to your room with this? I'm a big proponent of videoing, and videoing teachers, videoing myself modeling, watching it with the teacher in the process as I'm coaching them, and then pausing it. Okay, well, why did you pause it there? And talking about, well, what do you want to do better? Did this go how you planned it? Because there are so many things that we plan, but then we don't execute, or we execute it in a very different way than we were planning on, because we're in the moment, and sometimes we really have to be flexible, and sometimes the plans have to go out the window because they don't work for that day or for that group of kids that day. And so were they being flexible and talking about those pivoting moments, and then how can we better prepare for those as we're planning? And so it's just that ongoing process of growth and learning and being patient with them and supporting them through the growth process, because it takes time and sometimes it just doesn't click that first time.
I think Nicole brought up a good point on giving them that time. Andrew and I have a teacher in our building who, this is her third year, and her first year was spent crying almost every day, whether it was the management in the classroom or the instruction didn't go the way she wanted it or whatever it was. And giving her that time with both Andy and myself, and just, you know, going in and teaching the class for her, or modeling it, co-teaching, and that all of those things came into play, as Nicole said, sitting down and planning it with her and then watching her do it, asking that question, did it go the way you wanted it to? Now we're in year three with this teacher, and she is turning out to be one of our best literacy teachers. And so if she's doing that in year three, I'm so excited to see where she goes from here as we continue this coaching process with her. But again, it's that time, giving them that time. Just really quickly, because I know we're kind of running out of time. Another strategy is not only going into their classroom, but taking them out of their classroom, letting them go into someone else's classroom who is doing things, whether whatever they're doing is good or bad in our eyes, having them see someone else and be an observer. We don't get to go into other teachers' classrooms and see the functionality of those classrooms as much as we should. We're still, even with all of our PLTs and everything else, we're still an island when we go into our room. And we don't have that sight. We can hear someone else say, this is what I do in my room. But to actually see it in practice is a whole other thing. And I think that is a huge part for modeling best practice within a school. Having that open feel, and being able to go into classrooms and observe other teachers teaching and talk to the students in their class about what's happening and what they're learning, and doing all those questions that you would have asked of you, or your students would have asked of them when an evaluator or an observer comes in.
I would also piggyback off of that, Jean, because I think one of the other big things that I didn't mention is when you're giving feedback to teachers, feedback is important, but also having time after observations to ask probing questions to get them to do the thinking and them to do the heavy lifting to figure out the reflection piece of what happened in that classroom, and not necessarily at first telling them where it's at, having them come up with it. Because if they are thinking about it, really reflecting on what happened or what they saw in another teacher's classroom, it really gets them to do the thinking. Just like we want students to do the heavy lifting, we want teachers to do the heavy lifting within their growth and their pedagogy as they're walking through this practice as well.
All right, Kelly, any final thoughts before we bring this ship to port?
Sure, I will make it brief. I agree with what Jean and Nicole have both shared. I'll just add on two things. One, in thinking about co-teaching and co-planning, I really encourage the co-planning around a unit study. Because sometimes we plan one lesson with someone and then it's kind of a one and done. And so how do we come alongside a grade level or department, co-plan the unit or lesson, and come alongside them in learning that? The other piece that I'm going to say is when we step into the role of an assistant principal, you know, I didn't teach every grade. I was a principal at a K-8. I did not teach every grade. And so one of the things I'd encourage folks to do is student shadowing. Sitting in class alongside, if you only taught math and you've never taught literacy, okay, how do you learn? You can't, it's more than just looking at a pacing chart. Sit in class, watch through the lens of a student. Understand the sequence and what they're being asked. I think that sometimes when we step into administration, we're afraid, like there's already so much on our plate, but we're afraid to say, I don't know. And how do I go about doing that? Well, I'm going to be really vulnerable here and I'm going to sit in class like as a student. Having a teacher to say, hey, I need to learn this, and can I come alongside you and actually try out this lesson? Because I didn't teach during the Common Core time, okay? So let me try this out, and you give me feedback, because I can't then, I'll be a better supporter, coach, evaluator if I then try it myself. So I'll just leave it at that.
Kelly, and I'm just telling you, Wallace is going to be ecstatic because you are really, really, really living what they believe. So when they look, when our staff and scholars, everyone on here looks at Wallace Foundation and they look at their school leadership, they're going to say, oh, Kelly Ann just spoke this elaborately. Anyway, we thank everybody for being over here. We're going to kick this to Gracie. If you need us, reach out to us. We're here.
Yes, thank you all for being here. Thank you for our great moderators and our panelists today. And we do want to thank the Wallace Foundation, because it's through their grant work that we get to bring these kind of quality webinars to you, that where we can really share that practical piece so that you can go back and put these best practices in place in your building. So thank you all today and have a great evening.
And take a snapshot of our questions and answers. So if you need us, you can reach any of us. We're almost experts, but we could also use some of your help as well.